VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says Tehran will take what he calls the next step in increasing its uranium enrichment this weekend. U.S. President Donald Trump took the United States out of the Iran nuclear agreement more than a year ago, and Rouhani suggests that gives his country a nuclear-free hand. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma on Tehran's announcement.
President Hassan Rouhani has warned European partners in its faltering nuclear deal that the Islamic nation would increase its enrichment of uranium to any amount that we want, putting pressure on them to offer a way round intense US sanctions targeting the country. Authorities on Monday had acknowledged Iran has broken through a limit placed on its stockpile of low-enriched uranium. An increasing stockpile and higher enrichment closes the estimated one-year window Iran would need to produce enough material for a nuclear bomb. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
An airstrike on a migrant detention center near the Libyan capital of Tripoli has taken dozens of lives. United Nations Refugee Agency spokesman Charlie Yaxley says there are fears additional deaths will be announced.
Well, we're horrified at the news today that at least 40 people have lost their life in an airstrike last night that hit a detention center in Tejura. A rescue operation is currently underway, and we know that many more are injured and that the death toll may rise even higher.
Yaxley also said this bloodshed could have been avoided.
This is a tragedy that was very much preventable. Just where a couple of months ago, we urgent evacuation of people from this specific detention center after a similar airstrike injured two of the people inside.
Fighting for control of Tripoli between Libya's internationally recognized government and the self-styled Libyan National Army led by rebel General Khalifa Haftar has been going on for months. For more news, you can always go online to voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. The United States is set to celebrate its birth as a nation, but here in Washington, there are complaints that President Trump is intent on turning July 4th into something that presents a dramatic break with tradition. Here is AP correspondent Sagar Magani from the Pentagon.
Two Bradley fighting vehicles are now near the Lincoln Memorial, where the president will give a speech tomorrow. Some Abrams tanks are also here in Washington, and the Pentagon's scrambling to line up flyovers by a B-2 stealth bomber and other aircraft. This morning, the president says it'll be the show of a lifetime, but critics say he's politicizing the nation's birthday party and using troops as props. He says military leaders are thrilled to participate. If so, they're hiding it well. The Pentagon's referring questions here to the White House and won't even say if Joint Chiefs Chairman Joe Dunford will attend. Sagar Magani at the White House.
President Trump reports as fake the word he's given up the plan to include a citizenship question on the 2020 U.S. Census. Mr. Trump's words today fly in the face of those uttered by his own Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who said a day earlier that census forms would be printed without the question on citizenship. The U.S. trade deficit has reached a five-month high, mainly due to widening gaps with Mexico and China. It is something that is bound to get President Trump's attention, given what often seems a fixation on such imbalances. Here is AP correspondent Mike Hempen.
The Commerce Department says the gap between the goods and services the U.S. sells and what it buys from foreign countries increased to $55.5 billion in May. That's the highest since December. Exports increased on rising shipments of soybeans, aircraft, and cars. But imports climbed even more due to increases in crude oil and cell phones. The deficit with Mexico reached an all-time high of just under $10 billion, while the gap with China jumped to $30 billion. Mike Hempen, Washington.
Six people died, more than 20 are missing after a small coastal dam burst in India's Maharashtra state, as heavy monsoon rains produce havoc in the country's western region. India's National Disaster Response Force searched for survivors using drones. The area around the country's financial capital, Mumbai, has been hard hit. Unprecedented heavy rains in recent days have pushed the death toll there to 35. Rail, road, and air traffic has been disrupted, as many parts of the city of over 20 million remain underwater. The United States has put a major anti-Pakistan militant organization, the Balochistan Liberation Army, on its list of global terrorist groups. Islamabad has welcomed the move. More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, July 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, reports of at least 44 people dead and over 100 wounded in an airstrike in the Libyan capital of Tripoli.
My direct message to the Palestinian people is that despite what those who have let you down in the past tell you, President Trump and America have not given up on you.
Also, Iran's president warned European partners in its faltering nuclear deal Wednesday that Tehran will increase its enrichment of uranium. And President Vladimir Putin has signed a bill suspending Russia's participation in a pivotal nuclear arms treaty. The United Nations mission to Libya says at least 44 people were killed and more than 130 wounded in an airstrike on a migrant detention center in the Libyan capital of Tripoli. VOA's Kate Pound Dawson reports.
UN Libya envoy Hassan Salame condemned the attack, saying the strike clearly amounts to the level of a war crime. It was the highest publicly reported toll from an airstrike or shelling since Eastern forces loyal to Khalifa Haftar launched an offensive 3 months ago to take the capital. Tripoli is the base of Libya's internationally recognized government. Thousands of migrants are held in government-run detention centers in what human rights groups in the United Nations say are often inhumane conditions. The UNHCR Refugee Agency in May called for the Tajura Center, which holds 600 people, to be evacuated after a projectile landed nearby, injuring two migrants. Photos published Tuesday show African migrants undergoing surgery in a hospital after the strike. Others lay on beds, some covered in dust or with bandaged limbs. Reuters News spoke to Osman Musa, a Nigerian migrant who was walking through the rubble carrying his belongings.
Some people wounded and they die on the road on their way running. And some people are still under the block. So we don't know what to say. All what we know is we want UN to help people out of this place because this place is dangerous. We know it's going to happen like this before, but we don't have any power to do anything. So there's small children and there's some people that stranded here. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. Like me, I don't know what to go. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go.
The Tajura area, east of Tripoli's center, is home to facilities belonging to the internationally recognized government and has been targeted by airstrikes for weeks. Haftar's Libyan National Army, which backs a parallel government in eastern Libya, has seen its advance on Tripoli held up on the city's outskirts. Commanders this week said they would start heavy airstrikes after traditional means of war had been exhausted. Haftar says his goal is to create a unified government to bring stability to Libya. But his push to capture Tripoli has derailed UN attempts to broker an end to the chaos that has prevailed since the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Libya is a main departure point for migrants from Africa fleeing poverty and war and trying to reach Europe by boat. Many are picked up and brought back by the Libyan Coast Guard, supported by the European Union. Kate Pound Dawson, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Middle East correspondent and Istanbul Bureau Chief Heather Murdoch is on the scene.
We're just outside a hospital where we saw doctors treating wounded who were brought here last night after the blast. Before that, we came from a morgue where 19 bodies of the victims and 6 bags of unidentified remains were brought in early this morning. Detainees say they heard clashes in the distance last night, and when the blast hit the building, security guards let them out so they could escape. This morning, when we met surviving detainees in the yard outside the destroyed buildings, they said that they had been up all night outside and had very little to eat or drink. Police say the attack was certainly a part of the ongoing war between Tripoli's internationally backed forces and Eastern forces led by strongman Khalifa Haftar. This war is now entering its 4th month, and many Libyans say the future of this country is at stake. If Tripoli wins, we expect the country to remain divided and work towards peace talks and reunification through elections. If the Eastern forces win, one would expect that this would be a new era of Libyan strongmen under Khalifa Haftar. Reporting from Tripoli in Libya, I'm Heather Murdoch, VOA News.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is outraged by the attack, according to his spokesman, and the UN Security Council will also meet today to discuss the attack. Iran's president warned European partners in its faltering nuclear deal Wednesday that Tehran will increase its enrichment of uranium to any amount that we want, beginning on Sunday, putting pressure on them to offer a way around intense U.S. sanctions targeting the country. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
Speaking at a cabinet meeting in Tehran, Rouhani signalled that Europe has yet to offer Iran anything to alleviate the pain of the renewed US sanctions targeting its oil industry and top officials. Iran's nuclear deal currently bars it from enriching uranium above 3.67%, which is enough for nuclear power plants, but far below the 90% needed for weapons-grade levels.
That was the AP's Charles de Ledesma. The comments by President Hassan Rouhani come as tensions remain high between Iran and the U.S. over the deal, which President Donald Trump pulled America from over a year ago. While the increase represents Iran's first major departure from the accord, it still remains likely a year away from having enough material for a nuclear weapon. Iran insists its program is for peaceful purposes, but the West fears it could allow Iran to build a bomb. In recent weeks, the U.S. has moved an aircraft carrier, B-52 bombers, and F-22 fighters to the region, and Iran recently shot down a U.S. military surveillance drone. On Wednesday, Iran marked the shoot down by the U.S. Navy of an Iran passenger jet in 1988, a mistake that killed 290 people and shows the danger of miscalculation in the current crisis. President Vladimir Putin has signed a bill that formalizes Russia's departure from the 1987 Intermediate-Range Nuclear Forces Treaty with the United States following Washington's withdrawal from the pact. Putin has warned the U.S. against deploying new missiles in Europe, saying Russia will retaliate by fielding new fast weapons that will take just as little time to reach their targets. Police in Hong Kong said they have arrested 12 people who are involved in a pro-democracy protest that took place Monday morning ahead of the storming of the city's legislative building later that day. They face various charges, including possession of offensive weapons, unlawful assembly, assaulting a police officer, obstructing a police officer, and failing to carry an identification document, according to the police. 11 men and one woman were arrested. The brief statement did not describe the offensive weapons or provide further details. Here are some other major headlines from around the globe. The Kremlin said the details of a fire that killed 14 crew on a deep water submersible will not be made public because they include classified information. A military jury acquitted a decorated Navy SEAL of premeditated murder Tuesday in the killing of a wounded Islamic State captive under his care in Iraq in 2017. An Italian judge says the German captain of a migrant rescue ship that rammed a police boat as it tried to dock at Lampedusa can go free. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on our VOAnews.com website and with our VOA mobile application. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Until the stars began to form, the only atoms in the early universe were mostly of hydrogen, some helium, and trace amounts of lithium and beryllium. Scientists theorize that about 100,000 years after the Big Bang, elements of helium and hydrogen atoms formed the first molecule in the universe, helium hydride. While many think the molecule should exist in parts of our universe, it was never detected until recently. In a new study published in the journal Nature, scientists say they were able to detect the signature of the first molecule in the universe in a planetary nebula 3,000 light years away near the constellation Cygnus. The discovery was made by the scientists who used sophisticated instruments that were aboard NASA's Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA, the world's largest airborne observatory. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Government investigators warn of dangerous overcrowding at more migrant facilities on the southwest U.S. border. publishing photos on Tuesday of packed cells in Texas's Rio Grande Valley, where some children have no access to showers or hot meals. And joining me in the studio with more on this developing story is VOA immigration reporter Victoria Maki. Thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having me again.
So what exactly is this report by the government inspector general?
So this is the second report we've seen in as many months. So I think the previous one was in May, in which the actual government investigators are making these, they call them unannounced visits to Border Patrol facilities. So these are the facilities where people who are detained by Border Patrol agents are being held. These are people who've recently crossed, usually within a few days, sometimes about a month ago. And what they're finding is that the conditions in these facilities are just, I think substandard is probably the most broad way to define it.
You said this was an unannounced visit, but was it? Do you have any reporting or any inkling that this may have been planned based on the ProPublica report that came out earlier this week on the CBP Facebook group that highlighted some of the horrific comments that were posted online?
So investigators have been looking into this for a while. It was before the ProPublica report on Monday. It was even before the Associated Press report about 10 days ago, or might have even been last week, about the conditions in these facilities. So this is definitely something that was already on inspectors' radars.
We've seen a lot of comments from lawmakers about the conditions at these facilities. What is the White House saying?
The White House has been surprisingly quiet in the last few days about this specific issue. They were very active in the issue over the funding last week, but since this report was released, I haven't seen much of a reaction. Usually, you'll see tweets by the president, and I haven't seen those.
One other question I do have for you is that we're talking about these individuals as migrants, but there have been questions about, because they're coming up, escaping violence and persecution, how come they're not being deemed as refugees?
It's a great question, and it's one we hear a lot. Here's the issue with refugees and asylum seekers. It is a very limited legal definition. So you can really only be a refugee or an asylum seeker if you have been persecuted for certain reasons like nationality, race, religion. Drug violence doesn't count for that legal definition. Domestic violence doesn't count for that. So you have a lot of people who are indeed fleeing really awful situations, but don't qualify under those legalities.
Victoria Maki covers immigration issues for VOA here in Washington. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Agnes Calamard, the United Nations lead investigator for the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, has called for an international criminal probe into what she described as an extrajudicial execution. She also called on the United States to help disclose the facts. Khashoggi was a critic of the government of Saudi Arabia, and Saudi agents killed him last October in the Saudi consulate in Turkey. From Washington, reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi has the story.
2 weeks after releasing her report on Khashoggi's murder, calling on the international community to hold the Saudi state accountable, Agnes Calamard came to Washington with a specific recommendation for the United States.
I'm recommending an FBI investigation and declassification of the information related to the killing of Mr. Khashoggi. It could be a hearing within the Congress. All of those recommendations are really about unlocking the information that is in this country at present and that is being held under lock key. And then the other recommendations are looking beyond individualized sanctioning the Crown Prince, because there is enough evidence to suggest that he has a part of responsibility for the killing.
In her report, Calamard found that Khashoggi's murder was organized by high levels of the Saudi government, including Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is the defense minister. U.S. intelligence agencies also have said it appears Salman ordered the killing. The Saudi government has denied any role in the killing and has charged several men with the crime, saying they were rogue operatives who acted independently. Calamard on Tuesday expressed hope that the United States legislators will take up the case.
I hope that the U.S. Congress and Senate that have been quite courageous in challenging the White House are trying to ensure that those key principles, human rights protection, war crimes, and so on, are drivers for foreign policy.
She said the world's wealthiest nations have done little to hold Saudi Arabia to account for Khashoggi's death and suggested the oil-rich kingdom should not host next year's Group of 20 summit.
Next year, the G20 will be taking place in Saudi Arabia. The political accountability for Mr. Khashoggi will mean that it doesn't happen or it moves elsewhere.
Calamard says moving the G20 summit, scheduled for November 2020 in Riyadh, should be a part of an international effort for judicial accountability. She said it should be backed by political and diplomatic pressure on the Saudi government. U.S. President Donald Trump says he raised the issue with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman last week at the G20 summit in Japan. Trump told the reporters he was extremely angry about Khashoggi's killing, but that nobody has directly pointed a finger at bin Salman, contradicting the findings of U.S. intelligence agencies. Trump has not pursued further action, arguing that Khashoggi's case had been heavily investigated. The White House has blocked congressional efforts to halt arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Japan ordered more than 1 million people on the southernmost island of Kyushu to take shelter and evacuation shelters and other safe areas Wednesday as heavy rain threatened to trigger widespread landslides. Japanese broadcaster NHK said some parts of southern Kyushu have received up to 1 meter of rain since Friday, about as much as usually falls in the whole month of July. And forecasters expect as much as 30 centimeters more rainfall in some areas by Thursday evening. NHK also reports another 930,000 more were advised to evacuate. Television footage showed rivers filling with fast-moving brown water, but none had overflowed their banks as of Wednesday evening, although one low dike had broken. Several small landslides have been reported, including one that swept away two cars. No injuries have been reported thus far. European Union leaders agreed to name Christine Lagarde as the new head of the European Central Bank and sealed the deal on filling the EU's another EU top spot with a marathon of talks that exposed deep division within the bloc. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy reports.
After all, Europe is a woman.
EU leaders are finally in agreement over how to fill the bloc's top jobs. And for the first time in its history, women are breaking up the male monopoly of power in some of the most prominent positions.
A perfect gender balance.
Christine Lagarde has been picked to head the European Central Bank and Ursula von der Leyen to top the European Commission.
Yes, it is time to fix the roof.
Lagarde was France's first female finance minister and has been head of the International Monetary Fund since 2011. Her next big role would be the revival of the Eurozone economy, though she has zero direct active experience in monetary policy. Von der Leyen would replace Jean-Claude Juncker as head of the EU's executive arm. She's a close ally of German Chancellor Angela Merkel and is the country's defense minister. If approved, she would steer policy for the world's biggest trade bloc and its 500 million people. The third nominee is Josep Borrell. Spain's acting foreign minister has been chosen to be the EU's new top diplomat. And Donald Tusk will be replaced by Charles Michel in the role of European Council President. His main challenge will be to build bridges between the 28 EU member states, who are looking increasingly divided. The deal followed a tortuous summit. Appointments have to satisfy all EU member states and the big political parties. 3 days of negotiations at times looked close to collapse and exposed deep rifts in the bloc when a consensus for the vacancies looked almost impossible. Now just the president of the European Parliament is left to fill. The strongest contender is this man, Italian lawmaker David Sassoli. All the nominees will need to be approved by the Parliament, and that ordeal is far from over. The Socialist and Green bloc in the Assembly have rejected the nominations. But markets are already reacting. Eurozone bond yields sank to fresh record lows following Lagarde's surprise nomination, as traders bet she won't raise rates anytime soon.
That was Reuters reporter Michelle Hennessy, and you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. A court in Sydney has charged two men arrested during counterterrorism raids with involvement in the Islamic State terror group. Phil Mercer reports Australian investigators continue to interview the alleged mastermind of an Islamic State-inspired plot to attack buildings, including churches, courts, and embassies. He has also been accused of preparing an act of terror.
The men were arrested in simultaneous raids in Sydney. 23-year-old Radwan Dadak has been charged with being a member of the Islamic State Terror Group, or IS, which is a crime in Australia. Investigators believe another man, Isaac El-Matari, who's 20, was the mastermind behind a suspected conspiracy to attack buildings in Sydney, Australia's biggest city. Senior officers have said planning for an attack was in its early stages, and that police stations, military establishments, courts and churches were potential targets. El-Matari had been under surveillance in Australia since returning from Lebanon last year. It's alleged he planned to travel to Afghanistan to fight with Islamic State extremists there. It's the 16th alleged major plot to have been foiled in Australia since 2014. Ian McCartney is the Assistant Commissioner of the Australian Federal Police.
There are still those people in the community who wish to do us harm, who wish to do the community of Australia harm. I want to say they don't represent the Islamic faith. Their actions are criminal and they represent hatred and terror.
Australia has warned of the twin threat to its national security of homegrown extremists, often radicalised online, and of militants returning home after fighting with terrorist groups overseas. A third man arrested in raids Tuesday has been charged with fraud and has been released on bail. He has not been accused of terrorism offences. Australia's national terror threat level remains set at probable, which means the authorities suspect that individuals and groups have the intent and capability to carry out an attack. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Lee Iacocca, who led two of America's big three automakers from the 1960s through the 1990s, has died at the age of 94. Iacocca joined the Ford Motor Company as an engineer after World War II and rose through the ranks as a salesman and executive officer over the next two decades. In 1964, he guided the team that designed Ford's classic Mustang sports car. Iacocca was named company president in 1970, but he was fired in 1978 after clashing with Chairman Henry Ford II, the namesake and heir of the automaker's founder. He joined rival Chrysler the next year and led the struggling company from collapse after he secured a controversial $1.5 billion loan from the federal government. And if we take a look back in time, it was on this date in 1976 that Israel launched its daring mission to rescue 106 passengers and Air France crew members being held at the Entebbe airport in Uganda by pro-Palestinian hijackers. The commandos succeeded in rescuing all but four of those hostages. And that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, and engineer, Rob McLean, thank you so much for joining us. Now for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow The Voice of America on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And also, don't forget, with our VOA mobile app, you can download our stories and take them with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a wonderful Wednesday.